I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about Mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
The case did not slow down overnight. In fact, it exploded. We've got a brand new timeline, new forensic focus, and new law enforcement activity at the house yet again. And tonight, investigators are acknowledging just how much they're still trying to untangle in the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie. Where is she? Is she alive? Let's pray she is.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon that brings you the very best guests in all of true crime. We have something like 50 countries represented in our community, which is why it is no longer just a show or a podcast. We're back tonight. There was another press conference today. Huge shout out. And I'll bring him in right now to Detective Phil Ramos, retired Las Vegas homicide, three-time officer of the year, former undercover drug operative for the Las Vegas Metropolitan PD. You guys know I like the fact that he drives a Harley, and he was here for the press conference while I was en route in an aeroplane, but I've landed. I apologize. Anytime I'm traveling, I'm always discombobulated, so bear with me. Next up, a brand new first-time best guest. His name is Bernard Zipor, a retired 25-year veteran of the U.S. Department of Justice. He was an ATF special agent in charge. He's now a corporate security executive working with an AI company to solve criminal cases. And we'll ask him a little bit about that. And he also teaches a bit at Arizona State University, coming to us from the greater Scottsdale, Phoenix area. And last but certainly not least, you guys remember Jay Fulton from the Tepe murders, Columbus, Ohio homicide detective. Welcome to One and All. We're going to dive right into this. And then STS Nation, thank you for being here for this coverage. This is truly a unique and very bizarre story. Just a short time ago, the Pima County Sheriff's Office, they released yet another statement, and I'm going to read that to you. It's interesting. It's not really revolving around the criminal case, so don't get excited here, but they wanted the media to share it. And it reads as follows. The Pima County Sheriff's Department understands that many people want to share their thoughts and prayers with the family of Nancy Guthrie, and we appreciate the community's support. We respectfully ask that these messages be shared on social media and not through the Pima County Sheriff's Department's non-emergency phone line. Calls expressing condolences have overwhelmed our communication staff, and it's critical that the line remain available for law enforcement purposes. Thank you for your understanding and cooperation as we continue to serve the community. Signed, Chris Nano, Sheriff of Pima County. I'll tell you, if you have a concern, send it to me. Don't bother the Pima County Sheriff's Office. They're busy investigating the case on Twitter. You can hit me up at Podcast STS. I've been getting a ton of messages, and a lot of them are really fascinating, and I'll share some of them tonight. You can hit me up on Instagram at Surviving Survivor. On your way in, don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button. We've also got an active Patreon page. Phil Ramos, to you again, I cannot thank you enough. And I think Phil realizes how appreciative STS is to have a guy of his stature here. And not only doing that, but watching the press conference with us. Phil, I mean, what was your biggest takeaway? I did get a chance to watch it, you know, on the airplane, which is a little difficult to do, as you know. But it did seem like there's a whole lot new, and it seemed like Chris Nanos was still sort of treading water, trying to keep his chin, mouth, and nose above the waterline, so to speak, as he is struggling a bit here to keep everything afloat. What was your take?
Well, it's just continues to be just a mess, man. But, you know, remember, we for the last 2 days, we've been talking about this ridiculous ransom thing and how it didn't make any sense to anybody by any stretch. None of the puzzle pieces fit into a theory of it being a ransom. And, you know, that panned out today the way it did. So now the time that they spent wasted following up on that, they could have been, you know, getting better information and doing what they were supposed to be doing. As it is, you know, they lost a couple of days, but now they're going to keep going and hopefully pray to God that she's still alive.
Thank you to Miranda Lee here. Someone says you're supposed to be on vacation. It's not really a vacation. It's someone's birthday. It's right here. And the COE is very good friends with them. So I'm here. She's not too happy about it. Phil Ramos caught a little glimpse of that, but it was nothing too severe. Nothing too crazy. Don't worry. But we're good. And she knows I'm a little bit of a workaholic. But Bernard, great to have you here. First time. Bernard, a former ATF special agent in charge. Now, I know the FBI is involved in this. Are your old colleagues at the ATF assisting? It sounds like today, you know, they brought in this special unit within Pima County, which is basically every law enforcement agency. As far as you know, is the ATF involved in trying to figure out what happened here with Nancy Guthrie, Bernard?
Not anything mission specific, but they have provided some canine support and some tangential intel support. So I think it'd be revealing if you saw them participating directly, because there would probably be a firearms nexus, of course.
Yeah. And I mean, Bernard, for those who don't know, what you know, the ATF is a federal agency. The FBI is a federal agency. How do you guys sort of distinguish yourselves from each other?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, ATF is, you know, well over 200 years old. It's been 9 different agencies, including the Bureau of Prohibition and Elliot Ness and the Untouchables. But it's just, it has been the landing spot for everything violent crime related in the federal United States Code. And so they really have some serious horsepower for going after really violent people. And actually more horsepower for terrorism cases too that involve weapons or explosives. But, you know, you'll see ATF really concentrating. They're supposed to be concentrating on violent offenders, multi-convicted felons, crime syndicates, prison gangs, foreign national gangs, all that stuff to a great degree. Because of that, their criminal intelligence is outstanding. And, you know, ATF has an ancient charter from its first inception by Congress. It says to support state and local law enforcement. It is designed to be a sharp scalpel that a local department can use. For example, I remember going to Las Vegas in my first command staff meeting there, listening to a guy that had been chased by Vegas Metro multiple times, arrested, and he kept getting out on bond, and the officers kept encountering this guy. So, you know, we did a ruse that night and grabbed the guy. He was a 3-time convicted felon. He had been caught the last time with a gun. The U.S. Attorney's Office approved an indictment. He ended up going to Atlanta, Georgia for like 27 years. No one in Las Vegas will ever see that guy again. And that's really the purpose of that agency.
Wow. It's fascinating. And it started off as, related to prohibition. Jay Fulton, we got to know you during the Tepe murders, and great to have you back here. Obviously, a very seasoned homicide detective yourself. I mean, we thought the Tepe case was crazy. We thought the Nick Reiner case was crazy. And I said to myself, during those two criminal cases, it can't level up much higher. And now we have an 84-year-old woman who's the mother of America's biggest morning show, the host there. She goes missing. We're 5 days in, almost 6 days in. I mean, what is your kind of 30,000 foot bird's eye view of where we're at right now after 5 days, which is not a whole lot of information?
Yeah, you're going to work this. I mean, you know, these cases have worked in as much detail as actual homicide cases. Certainly, this person is, this victim is certainly in an at-risk category. You read about the medication, the lack of mobility. This would be a burdensome person to abduct. And it would be an odd selection for a ransom abduction in my 30,000 foot view. I'm not saying that's not, because I don't have any inside information.
But why, Jay? Fundamentally, why? Tell us why. Like, why would it be a bad idea?
You're taking on not only you're going to try and turn this thing around quickly because of the age and infirmity of the victim. I mean, you could do everything right as a caregiver to somebody that's 84 with cardiac issues, and you could lose them. Her being an ideal target. I mean, other than the fact that she's probably unable to defend herself in any way, making her an easy target, if you will. But odd selection, I think.
Yeah, and Bernard, I'm going to go back the other way now. I like to swing the pendulum here. So, Bernard, I mean, you heard Phil Ramos just saying, by the way, I'm going to open this up to a lot of questions towards the very tail end of the show. So I will get to, and I'll get to some during the show itself. But Bernard, you just heard Phil and Jay both really doubt the veracity of this ransom claim. Now, I can tell you there's news on this today. The FBI, shout out to Bill Malugin, Fox News, an excellent reporter. He was one of the first to break this. That the FBI arrested an individual who sent a fake ransom demand to the Guthrie family regarding their mother, Nancy. There were other ransom demands as well. So it's unclear, he was saying in a tweet, which one was fake. But Bernard, they did, in fact, arrest someone. So there's some sick people out there trying to benefit off of this. But when you go back to the press conferences, it was announced today that there was a deadline on, I guess, another ransom note of 5 p.m. today. That has come and gone, as far as I know. But I guess in Tucson time, it would be, I'm trying to figure it out. I guess it hasn't come yet, Tucson time. But what do you make of this? Because the sheriff has not definitively said, no, there's no ransom. They're sort of going with it. And I'm going to replay that Savannah video from last night where she says that the family's willing to talk. So what is going on here?
Well, we only have to look at it historically, because if you look at all the high profile kidnappings, and this would be one, obviously, because it's a person who's related to somebody of notoriety, it almost always includes this fake ransom scheme and the nonsense that goes with it. So, you know, I've always said since the beginning of this, the biggest challenge for the investigative team is getting through the chaff without dismissing nuggets that are relative to potentially what happened and where she's at. So really, case management and investigative case management is probably their most critical op right now. And it, you know how it is. It's such a challenge because they can't be overly dismissive of things that seem ridiculous or not related, but at the same time, they cannot burn up those valuable investigative resources, and specifically time, because we're on a time crunch because of her health and whatnot. That's her biggest challenge. And this, the ransom stuff, you could expect that was going to happen, no doubt about it. And there's probably more of it. But at the same time, if you also look at some of these things historically, they're the ones that seem ridiculous that actually were coming from the people involved. So they have to give it all the attention.
I'm sorry, I was muting and talking to the COE simultaneously. Forgive us, we're in a hotel, so now I'm screaming to her while muted. But I'm seeing here that the brother was on Instagram. If anyone knows, are you talking about Savannah Guthrie's brother? And let me know in the comments section. This is such a fluid case. I mean, things are happening every 5 minutes. You know, this is like a party that we're at, and there's a party bus to take us from the airport to the hotel, and I'm on the phone, and everyone is like, is Joel going to be on his phone all weekend just podcasting? And I have to sit there and fend everyone off. So What can I tell you, man? I like my job. The COE is going to airdrop it, she says. Okay, now we're going to airdrop and I'm going to accept. Sorry to introduce you to the technical side of this show live. If you're new to the show, we are Footloose and Fancy Free. I'm a former Fox News national correspondent. I host a live panel show like this Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time. The COE, she's the chief of everything. And my wife, she's a former CBS News correspondent, the guy who books the best guests in true crime, Steve Cohen, former CBS network booking producer. And then we've got Space Coast, the audiophile on the West Coast, who handles all the tech stuff. Again, please like, please subscribe. And getting a little more information on the ransom arrest here. Phil, let me just break this down and then we'll come back to you on the ransom. So this was the arrest on the hoax ransom. We don't know about the legit ransom, but everyone let me know because I'm all turned around. It is now 5:20 in Tucson, Arizona. So that 5 o'clock deadline has come and gone. But first, a Los Angeles man named Derek Colella. He has been arrested by the FBI for allegedly sending texts to the Guthrie family to ask for Bitcoin and see if they would respond. His text messages are not believed to be connected to the ransom demand. This is according to Bill Malugin. And then a DOJ criminal complaint explains how they caught him. And basically, they say that the feds tried to use a VoIP, which I'm blanking on exactly what it's voice something, whatever app, which they were able to quickly get around via an emergency disclosure request to their mobile carrier. Then they found his IP address and linked it to his California address. So Phil Ramos, whoever this whack job is, Derek Colella, they were easily able to, you know, maneuver with the phone companies to track him down. He's tertiary, to use David Sarney's word, to the story. He's sort of collateral damage in all this. But what do you make of the fact that there's also apparently this legit, or at least portrayed as a legit ransom that Savannah Guthrie got up and talked about yesterday. And that deadline has come and gone and there hasn't been any proof of life. What does this tell you?
You know, I don't know that it tells you anything. I mean, that might be part and parcel of some other knucklehead trying to get money out of the family for whatever reason. It's just none of the aspects of what's occurred to this point, the blood at the scene, her medication, her digital devices, that none of those land towards a theory of this was an abduction for ransom, because there's too much of a trade-off there. We keep going back to this medication. What is it and why was she supposed to pass away from not having it after 24 hours? If that's the case, then all this ransom nonsense isn't going to pan out. If it was ransom to begin with, then surely that they would have known about these conditions and they would have made sure to take care of their prized possession, being Nancy. And it's just, I don't think any aspect of any ransom is going to pan out here. It just, it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense.
I'm just so fascinated by it. And again, I'm going to play that Savannah Guthrie video from yesterday. Had a lot of people who were saying that she has her eyes shut while her sister is talking. I said yesterday we need to give the family the benefit of the doubt. One of the things, jumping around here a little bit, Bernard, that the sheriff did reiterate today in the press conference was that they did take a car from the scene to process it. And many people are assuming that that is Sister Annie's car. What does that tell you? But before you answer that, everyone wants to know what's up with the number three and the three triangles.
That's my company, Three Delta Consulting. My call sign was Delta Three. And since I've been a kid, I've been obsessed with the Spartan creed of mind, soul, and body.
Oh, I love it. Bernard's right for Surviving My Biggest Case, where we talk one-on-one. I'm going to do that with you. What is this SOP, or is there something more to this with, if that is Annie's car or her husband's car that was at the property and they towed it, impounded it, and are processing it, do they just have to do that, or does that say something more?
I mean, to me, it's comparative DNA. They have the blood in the house, and, you know, they need to match contact with every vehicle, everything that was in the house where there was anybody, because I mean, this is pure speculation and I don't want my homicide contemporaries here to laugh at me, but I mean, if you think about it, you know, say there's a family friend or they have somebody that assists once in a while, who's a somebody that's kind of on the outside, and that person's DNA is potentially in the car and they want to make comparative because maybe they found some something else in the house. But I just top of mind, it comes to be comparative DNA. So they have other exemplars compared to if there was anything found in the house or where they're saying there was a crime scene. So they would have to collect that. In addition to those, you may have information that's more specific about the conveyance, but to me, it sounds like a DNA play. But that, again, is speculation.
Okay. I'm bringing you guys back right here. The COE is trying to upload literally over my shoulders, you guys. See, we're just one big happy family. Stand by one second. The COE is going to do this right now. I don't know how to do anything technical. That's a COE's arm. Look at her looking pretty here, ready to go out. And she's waiting for me. God, I'm going to take heat tonight. Phil Ramos, I'm going to have to call you for some marriage counseling in a little bit. Okay. So this is from the press conference today. Bernard, this is an unusual first show for you. It's not quite always this bizarre, but this is apparently Cameron, I believe it is, Cameron Guthrie, the brother, if I'm correct. Let's watch this together. We literally are just getting this, and we're getting it thanks to you who flagged us. Here we go.
This is Cameron Guthrie. I'm speaking for the Guthrie family. Whoever is out there holding our mother, we want to hear from you. We haven't heard anything directly. We need you to reach out, and we need a way to communicate with you so we can move forward. But first, we have to know that you have our mom. We want to talk to you, and we are waiting for contact. This is Cameron Guthrie. I'm speaking for the Guthrie family. Whoever is out there holding our mother, we want to hear from you. We haven't heard anything directly. We need you to reach out, and we need a way to communicate with you so we can move forward. But first, we have to know that you have our mom. We want to talk to you, and we are waiting for contact.
I mean, if it doesn't get any crazier, Phil Ramos, your reaction, I mean, before you say anything, he's reading something because I can see he's looking down, and I'm all twisted around in my own hotel room here looking at my stuff. So I can tell he's reading something. You guys just all said this ransom thing is bogus. What is going on here? This seems very much more so than last night. It appears that authorities are saying, hey, Cameron, get in front of the camera and read this. What is happening? And this is happening in real time.
Yeah, I think this is part of a continuation of Savannah's statement last night that was, I'd say, 90% prepared by the Behavioral Services Unit from the FBI, you know, trying to reach out, touch the humanity of whoever is responsible for this and slow things down and work on making her human, making a person realize, look, you've got a human being that a lot of people love, and just, you know, soften it up a little bit, because they haven't heard anything legitimately about what's going on and why. And I think that the brother statement just now is a continuation of that. Because you can see, yeah, and it's got the same genre, so to speak, as the statement from last night.
Yeah.
But Ramos, where I'm hung up is, assuming the Pima County Sheriff or the FBI is behind this, why are they perpetuating this ransom story if none of you think it's a ransom story? And it doesn't seem like a ransom story. Are they trying to soften up the person who actually did it to just come forward? It's just not making a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with the holdback. They, you know, we all know that there's a lot of stuff that they know that they're not releasing, and therefore we're in no position to make that determination. So I think that plays into what the extended plan is on bringing this to a successful conclusion. I think that's part of it. And I think that, for whatever reason, and whatever reasons they have for playing this out, has got to do with what they know. I think, just based on the cases that we've had like this in the past, there's a little, well, not a little, a significant amount of information that they've got that they're playing with and trying to figure out how to handle it and keeping that away from us.
Yeah. Jay Fulton, you want to add to this? So, I mean, if I'm understanding this correctly, I've got one retired federal agent and two homicide detectives who are saying there's no way this is an actual kidnapping and ransom. But we were told that there was a deadline at 5 o'clock today that passed. And I think there's another one on a Monday deadline, which is mentioned in this comment right here. So you've got a Thursday and then a Monday deadline. And now to carry it forward even more, Savannah Guthrie and her two siblings said something yesterday along these lines. And today, the brother, Cameron, a retired Air Force pilot, so all the respect to him, he comes out just now, Jay, and reads some statement basically saying, look, you guys have to come forward. You have to show us proof of life. If the sheriff's office knows who did this, why are they doing this?
Well, I don't believe the sheriff's office knows exactly who did this at this point, but I do believe that I agree with you, the other members of the panel here. This is an attempt to reach out and soften make the person think about what has happened. If at one point this was intended to be some kind of ransom based on the wealth and or perceived wealth of a family member, and this thing clearly went south, there is no way that the offender can show proof of life at this point, in all likelihood. And therefore, if it was ever planned to be on his part, his or her part, a crime for financial gain, if they have nothing, if they can't meet these conditions that the family's putting out there, I don't think that you're going to hear from these people again. I think that these deadlines, that if in fact this has anything to do with the actual offender, they're just buying time. They want to un-ask the area where this thing occurred if it went south. More likely in a scenario like this, this is somebody known to the family. This is somebody that worked on the house, somebody that's had maybe a lawn service person. I would be looking at unhealthy communications to the person that's on television. Oftentimes we've seen people that are mentally unstable reach out, become infatuated with a media person or persona and try and get their attention and not balanced to begin with. So how does this manifest itself in this case? I think it manifests itself horribly wrong. And I think that's the direction that the law enforcement arm ought to be spending most of their investigative capital pursuing.
Mm. Welcome to new member Yvonne Lopez. Love having new people. Again, please hit that like and subscribe button. Jay Gussie here with the super chat. I hate to go to worst case scenario, but if you remember Israel Keyes' last victim, Samantha Koenig, there is a way to do ransom with someone who's passed too. As bad as it is to think it's been done. Is Israel Keyes, is he the one from Alaska? I believe so. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I want to play this one more time. This is just developing now. This has been an incredibly fluid story. And this is now Cameron Guthrie, Savannah's older brother, former Air Force pilot. And he didn't say a word yesterday, but he said this just now on Instagram. And then we'll get Bernard's take.
This is Cameron Guthrie. I'm speaking for the Guthrie family. Whoever is out there holding our mother, we want to hear from you. We haven't heard anything directly. We need you to reach out, and we need a way to communicate with you so we can move forward. But first, we have to know that you have our mom. We want to talk to you, and we are waiting for contact. This is Cameron Guthrie. I'm speaking for the Guthrie family. Whoever is out there holding our mother, we want to hear from you. We haven't heard anything directly. We need you to reach out, and we need a way to communicate with you so we can move forward. But first, we have to know that you have our mom. We want to talk to you, and we are waiting for contact.
So it plays twice. Bernard, I'm going to leave it open-ended. Your take on this?
It's right out of the negotiator's playbook, very clearly, as Phil had mentioned, and it has a very specific purpose to it. Again, it's to you're going to have a couple potential outcomes here. There is the chance of humanity. Say that there's somebody involved in this thing that has the compassionate side, that's not a sociopath. It might be somebody that, again, you know, is associated with the family. This is not a money play, but could be celebrity obsession. There's a lot of possibilities with it, but you're rattling the tree by getting a potential response. And if somebody is, like, say, narcissistic, sociopathic, they might respond just to play that they've been, that they're getting communicated to. But at the same time, it works for the humanity play. If somebody has any compassion, because what's happening now, obviously, is, you know, you've got a victim that could expire because of her current state of health, and they get panicky. Whoever has her gets into a full panic. So either they're going, you know, the outcomes of all that are bad, but there is the one potential good outcome where they might surrender her and try to unravel this thing. And so if they have any compassion, they're not sociopathic, that could be one possible and terrific outcome. You know, I think also people for the most part don't realize, and I hope, I would think that some would agree, that for law enforcement at this point, they would surrender the opportunity to capture the person or persons involved if they could get her back. If there was a way that they could get her released and alive, they would do that at risk of not having an arrest, because they can do that in retrospect. More importantly, they don't need to get fancy here. They just need to get her back if they have any kind of communication with somebody involved.
When I was in Tucson, and I mentioned this on the show yesterday, and then someone, I always say best guess, better community, but I knew someone would, and they did. They told me the case I was talking about from 2008. There's a woman named Kay Reed, like you read a book, K-K-Y, Kay Reed, 63 years old. She was dragged out of her house, murdered. The guy was later convicted. I think it was just a random guy, a weird dude in the neighborhood. Her body still never found. She had a mother that was still alive in her 90s, and it was a really tragic case. And it just shows sort of the random violence that it can occur in any city. But it just sort of fit with the level of crime in this particular area of town. It wasn't a bad area of town. It was on the far east side, if I recall. But if anyone's interested in that, her name is Kay Reed. Today's the fifth day with no proof of life of Nancy Guthrie. Every day that passes is another day. Now, this is a pricey super chat. I'm going to bring it up, and it's going to get me in trouble. So, JKC. Thank you for this. But I'm going to throw this to Ramos, who's the voice of reason, because a lot of conspiracy out there, a lot of people going to some pretty strange places. But you got to ask everything if you're in law enforcement. Any validity to the story that Savannah Guthrie's husband was to testify against the Clintons? He was a scrubber. Savannah Guthrie received received threats 3 weeks prior. I've heard that Phil Ramos, that the husband does do something with Clinton. The Epstein files are out there. But Phil, how do you caution people about going down some, you know, pretty serious rabbit holes, dark rabbit holes that probably don't have much to do with the investigation? And if this comes back to be related to Bill Clinton, I will formally apologize to JKC. Someone said JFC. Yeah.
Yeah, I will also, for what I'm about to say, then I think you better get Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker on board and see if they can come up with an answer to that.
So, Phil Ramos, before I do that, let me go right here. I've got Chris Nanos, the sheriff, from today, and then I've got the timeline, which I was going to talk about. But let's hear from the sheriff today, and then we will deconstruct this. Here we go.
Department, along with all of our partners at the FBI, have been working around the clock. And we just want her home and a way to get to the bottom of all of this, just as you do. Some DNA. We rushed what we thought was the best target for DNA. We did a rush through and got some of that back. the results were minimal. I think you all know the blood on the porch. That was one we did. It came back to Nancy. That's what we know. But there's still more items that have been submitted. We just haven't got them back yet. I want to be very clear. At this time, we have not identified a suspect or a person of interest in this case. We are working our best to do that. But to be clear, we have nobody of interest or any suspects that you would consider a prime suspect. We're just not there. We're not there yet.
Phil Ramos, we're not there with a prime suspect. We're just not there yet. He talked about rushing through the DNA. Even if they did rush through the DNA, is it a good idea for the top law enforcement officer in the county to actually tell the public that they rushed through the DNA? Maybe there's a better way. I mean, he's being honest. I appreciate that. But your reaction to, again, this specific part of the press conference and maybe more of the press conference, because I know you watched the whole thing today.
Yeah, I feel bad for the sheriff. His frustration is really starting to show. Depending on what type of DNA, you can get, there's some that you can get back relatively quickly. Mitochondrial DNA is going to take a little bit longer. Body fluids, the touch DNA, it all depends on what kind of DNA they're going after. And I don't think anybody was expecting anybody else's DNA to be on that porch from the blood, except for Nancy. It would have been a 70-yard field goal if it come up with a male, unknown male profile. But that, you know, DNA, for as valuable as it is, sometimes it takes a little bit. You know, we there's some cases that the FBI is trying to get a DNA profile for over a year on one of our cases out here, and they haven't been able to do it. So I think what they were hoping for is maybe some touch DNA by the bad guys inside the house there, because she's not going to be strong enough to put up a fight and draw blood from the bad guys or even grab a handful of hair.
Yeah.
And
you
go on the floor or something like that.
Yeah. Mary Coppola has been here a long time. $10 super chat. Thanks so much. She says, Bernard, I'll go to you on this. I'm not buying the ransom, which is what these three gentlemen said. It's a strategy with various missing persons. Example, Scott Peterson, Casey Anthony, Susan Smith. I think they have a strong suspicion and are waiting for stronger evidence. And I'll caveat that again with Ashley Banfield, big true crime journalist here in the States. She's now on YouTube, and she had a story dropped two nights ago that had everyone talking that police are, you know, the sheriff's office is looking at the sister and her partner slash husband. What's your gut tell you? Does your gut tell you? Because the impression that is given off is that there's just confusion everywhere. It doesn't seem like they're focused on a specific person to me. Do you think otherwise?
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep. And man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
I think the volume, again, the volume of information they have, it all has to be pursued. And, you know, like the beautiful thing about, and I'm just doing this to compliment my panel members, you know, homicide detectives, homicide investigations are sort of the varsity, because you have to have people with very high acuity and intelligence and very low ego, because they allow the evidence to speak to what their theory is, but they have to be very quick to surrender that theory if evidence is coming that collapses it. And so processing all this stuff that they have, tips and theories and physical evidence and everything that's happening, if they have simultaneous theories that they're pursuing and allowing them to collapse, and then they put resources on the new thing. I mean, the car towing in for examination DNA is interesting. Border Patrol showing up and doing desert searches the other day was interesting. But again, those could be very disparate theories as to what's happening, and they're pursuing the evidence as long as it's supporting that theory and surrendering it when it's either exonerating it or it's exculpatory or it proves that it's nothing. And so they just have a massive case management thing happening here, because if this was done in a vacuum, they'd have the evidence at hand, whatever they're finding and developing. But you have this massive layer of social media and national attention, people making contact, including people that are trying to monetize, capitalize on this with the nonsense, like the guy in LA that got pinched for the ransom note. Yeah. So it's all about case management here. And they can be pursuing something that's extremely hot for 5 hours, and then they find something that makes it of no value or it's nothing. So I think that's all happening simultaneously. And the hope would be that the FBI, the sheriff's office, Tucson PD, everybody who's involved in this are doing it in a really collegial manner, so they're not wasting time by running off independently, and that they have sort of, you know, you really want them to have telepathic communication about what's going on with the case. That's incredibly important, that everybody that's on the team knows what's been looked at, what the outcomes were, so they're not wasting time with the theories as they build.
Bernard's Zipor is definitely a keeper here. That was really eloquent, the way you phrase that about homicide detectives. And it's true. I mean, I see it firsthand just interviewing these guys, that they don't have those crazy egos, and they're willing to kind of examine every possibility, even if it's ridiculous, because sometimes the most ridiculous and outlandish are the right ones. Elizabeth, am I pronouncing it right, by the way? I probably should have asked you that before the show. Is it Zipor or Zaper? I'm assuming it's Zipor.
Whatever you like, because nobody in my family has any idea.
How do you say it?
I generally say Zaper as if it was Z-A-P-E-R, but I hear Z-A-P-O-R, like vapor with a Z, none of which bothers me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like them all. I don't know why I'm saying Zipor then, but okay. Zipor's
good. I normally get called that, you know. Okay. I'm first generation American from Ireland with a Slavic last name. So essentially, I'm a German girl in England who went to school in France and danced in Mississippi at an Alpha Kappa dance. So Zipor, Zipor, whatever works.
Yeah, thank you. I probably should have asked that before. The reward, by the way, is now $50,000, thanks to the feds. From Elizabeth Herman, going to Jay Fulton, why do you think they won't reach out to the family? Maybe because there's no kidnapping and no ransom here. But if there's an alleged ransom, they sent a ransom letter, but they're not following through. Why do you think they're not reaching out to the family yet, the kidnappers? I mean, we can go around and around here. It's just the weirdest thing. But Jay, your response to this set of questions.
Yeah, my answer would be, you know, and I'm certain they have agents and detectives and deputies and whoever following up on all those things. But that would be my question, too, as I went on and pursued the leads that I felt would be more fruitful in the case, because in all likelihood, and now the family's even asking them to reach out to us. Reach out. We're ready to talk to you. We're ready to provide you with what you're asking for. We want proof of life, and still nothing. Which, if this was a crime motivated by financial, direct financial gain, and I think everybody knows what I mean by indirect financial gain in this, but if it's a direct financial gain, i.e., I return this person in exchange for this compensation. That transaction would have materialized by now. You've got an 84-year-old heart patient. You cannot, unless you are a cardiac physician with a full set of medicines and implements to maintain this person's health and well-being, you're not going to be able to do that. So I think the reason that it's twofold. The first answer would be because I don't believe that that is the genesis of this crime. And the second would be if, it, in fact, it was a genesis crime, the one thing that is the deal breaker for the Guthrie family here, this proof can no longer be demonstrated, and probably maybe early on in this incident. And so at this point, the offender or offenders have to unask the area and go back to, like, this did not work out. We're going to have to come up with another scheme. The likely being the former as opposed to the latter.
And, I mean, they're essentially calling a bluff here, and whoever they're calling it on is not taking the bait. But
I think they're calling a bluff, and I think it's the right thing to do, because once again, I think, you know, our federal partners here have a lot of experience in this type of crime. And if they are giving these people, go out and say this, this has worked in this case, that case. We want to keep your mom being a person. We want to keep you being loving family members. And even if it's a 1% chance, I mean, it's worth the time spent to try and sow that field, so that if in fact it does turn out that way, that person or persons gets a conscience.
The question here from S. Beachy, why aren't they asking the public, Phil Ramos, to look for her, or send out an organized search party? You know, you see that with missing people all the time, the people in the colored vests going out with the sticks, looking around the desert. Is it simply because they don't know where to look? I mean, you don't want to send out a search party if you don't know where to look. Maybe they'd be looking close to home, but what is the answer to that?
Yeah, they just don't have it narrowed down enough. The situations that you're referring to, you know, you're looking at a park where a college-age young lady was jogging, or where little boys were playing on their bicycles. You know, you have a place to start. Here, you don't have a place to start.
I mean, you can start at the house, which is where, but this woman couldn't go more than 50 yards, they said, 50 feet, right. Self-ambulating. Right.
So, I mean, the whole thing started out as a search. And, there's only so much that the volunteers are able to do.
Yeah. I want to get to the timeline now, and I appreciate you all bearing with me, being that I'm out of my home studio and I'm a creature of habit. So forgive me here. But do we know for certain, Bernard, I can't tell you how many tweets and emails I got about this, and we're going to look at the timeline in just a second. But how do we know for certain that she was actually dropped off at the house as claimed at 9:48 p.m.? Sir, wait.
I think that would have been one thing that they would have worked on immediately, because obviously if there was any falsehood in that claim, then you have people that are involved. I mean, just any deception, any revelation that somebody was being deceitful or not truthful in any part of this really ignites a path to the dynamite. So I'm sure they have pursued that, and they have either confirmed or they're still working it. But that would definitely be something that they are examining probably right from the beginning.
Before we get to the timeline, Jay Fulton, back to you real quick. One more turn around the horn here. So the sheriff repeatedly has emphasized, and he did it again today, saying, we believe she's here, she's alive, and we want her home. The language appears to be very intentional, like signaling that the case is still being worked on as a potential rescue. Investigators are almost intentionally not crossing that line into recovery. Why?
They can't. I mean, they can't at this point. They have to work on that premise until they have proof otherwise. I was a little concerned with the blood on the porch as a homicide guy. And that matched her. But they have to treat this as a rescue until they have proof otherwise. Now, behind the scenes, what goes on with those detectives and those agents and those investigators that are taking down leads, they can think whatever they want, because that's amongst the team. We can discuss that in the office, in our car. But when that elected official goes in front of the public, the last thing he can do is surrender hope for the family of this victim. And that's, I mean, I think that's job one. And the investigators, they'll have all their own theories, but the sheriff is going to maintain that line until we have proof otherwise.
We're going to dig into this timeline in just one second, but Bernard, former ATF special agent in charge, here the FBI apparently was seen carrying what is known as a Celebrate UFED device used to extract deleted messages, analyze call logs and app activity, build precise digital timelines. And using Celebrate, I have to point out, doesn't mean someone is a suspect, but apparently this is a contraption that I know you're way more familiar with than I am. But why were they using that specifically? What's at the bottom of that tactic?
Well, you know, you think about everybody that has anything to do with the house, including family members and people that were driving the car, just everybody. There might be communication to them in the text form, missed calls, potential scam block calls that were actually something else that they themselves didn't pay any attention to. It's not top of mind, so it never comes, but it could tie into other things. So in addition to capturing all this digital data, it's also, well, similar systems are making an analysis of comparisons, like this disparate digital thing over here or phone number was also called or used here. And so it might take two people that you don't think have anything to do with each other. Now there's a connection. So it really does produce sort of a gold mine of information. It might all be for naught, but it's a way of examining digital evidence in retrospect that could make connections and ties that we would not have known about without it. So it's a pretty powerful piece of technology, and it is only going to add to the case, even if it's just for the fact of eliminating, you know, again, theories that shouldn't be wasted time on or pursued because they can be nullified with the fact that, for example, there's no connection proven digitally as an example.
Yeah. Ms. Kemp, did you see that 19,000 were watching live with Tim Jansen hosting, Phil and Phil Ramos, best guest and best host? It's obvious. I got to step down and hire Tim Jansen as host of the show. He's getting double my numbers. My ego's okay. You know, I can handle that. I'll just have to pay Tim more than I can afford, but I will pay. But a huge shout out to Tim. Tim and I were texting today. He's a great guy, and I appreciate him filling in very much. I might ask him to do it again tomorrow, depending on how much heat I take at dinner tonight for doing a podcast while away. So we'll have to play that one by ear. And then there's this question here here we go. Phil Ramos, to you, and then I'm going to come right back to you on the timeline. Why wouldn't the sheriff at least confirm who exactly dropped her off the night before if they were not a person of interest? I think the public has a really hard time. You guys have all been on the other side of the proverbial curtain. We haven't. So people are always like, well, why are they saying this but not saying this? Is there a tactic or a strategy to not tell the public who it was that dropped the person off?
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep. And man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, CARM, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
Well, it all depends on what the circumstances were. They obviously have their own reason for not revealing who dropped it off. But from what we understand is it was her other daughter and her nefarious looking husband or boyfriend or whoever he was. That being said, they also didn't walk her to the door from what I've been able to gather from all the different comments. I don't know how much that would come into play as far as the investigation goes, because let's play that out. The information that we have is that the cameras are destroyed and removed. Unless they were destroyed and removed before they came back, the images are going to be on there of who dropped her off and where the car was parked and how she got out of the car into the house. So that could be something that they're keeping close and don't want to reveal that because it's germane to the investigation. They don't want to compromise it. Maybe there was somebody else in the car.
Good point. And that's why he's the veteran homicide detective and we're not. Timeline here of Nancy Guthrie's disappearance. This is arguably the most important thing from the press conference today. Let's take a look at it. So we go back to January 31st was last Saturday. We're actually, it's hard to believe, coming up on a week almost. But so last Saturday, 5:32 p.m., Nancy travels to the local family's home. I think that is the sister. To Annie Guthrie's home. 9:48 p.m., the family, we don't know who, drops Nancy off at home. The garage door opens. 9:50, the garage door closes. Phil Ramos, I mean, you can go beyond the 9:50 time here, but I guess what strikes you the most about this timeline or what gap would you like filled in the most?
What they did for those 4 hours when they were at the house, what was going on there? And is it typical for her to be out that late? You know, she's in her 80s, mid-80s, and that seems to be a little bit later than my folks when they were that age would stay out. I would go over that several times on an interview and with the driver of the car that dropped her off.
For some unknown reason, the phone in my hotel room is ringing. I hope it's not for ransom. Definitely not going to answer it. Bernard, let me come back to you. So picking up on this timeline here, and you just heard Ramos say he wants to know what happened between 5:32 and 9:48 at that dinner and who was there, et cetera. But then the next day into the early morning hours, 1:47 a.m., doorbell camera disconnects. 2:12, software detects a person on camera, but the sheriff said it could have been an animal. No video available. The cameras weren't there. The sheriff also said whoever's spreading the rumor that the cameras were smashed, that's not necessarily true either. He wouldn't reveal that. Maybe they were just removed. 2:28 a.m., the pacemaker app shows a disconnect from the phone. And then you go to later that morning, 11:56 a.m., family checks on Nancy. 12:30 p.m., 911 call to Pima County Sheriff's Department. Patrol arrives. There was someone at the church who noticed her missing. That's not mentioned, but that's before 11:56 a.m. Same question. What stands out to you on this timeline? Every one of you guys always talks about timelines when you're investigating.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy duty information right there. I mean, yeah, could there be a legitimate technical failure on the camera? And this is all kind of compounding. And so without a doubt, they have to dig in and find out exactly what happened. And they'll do it, you know, in a couple of different ways, the best that they can. But my guess is whatever the manufacturer is of the Ring camera or the camera type, whatever it is involved in trying to forensically restore anything they can and also see if the deeper code for the fail system is telling them anything. So it's unusual. It's hugely important. And they're going to exploit probably the company of manufacturer to see if they can get more information on that aspect of it. And then, of course, the timing. The medical device part probably is the most disturbing to me. And of course, they will work with the medical device company to find out if, for example, is there an update of the telemetry portion at that time of the night so it doesn't disturb the patient? And so therefore it might be a normal thing where there is a communicative disconnect, but they'll find that out and they'll know, because if there's anything that's out of sorts here, that looks like it was done by human hands, done intentionally out of the parameters of, say, for example, a medical device, then we have something of significance. So that's pretty important and acute information right there. And they have to get more specifics from it. And I'm sure they've done that. And if they have done it, it's either been confirmed as normal or they're down a path on something else that leads to it. But that's pretty significant information to me anyway.
Yeah. Jay Fulton, you know, I love the inside baseball stuff. I look up to all you guys because I think it's an unbelievable career path. And it's also very selfless because it's not all about the Benjamins, as they say. And they're also investigators, some of the most passionate people you're ever going to find about their cases. I was joking yesterday. I don't hear my brother-in-law ranting and raving about doing angioplasties every day, but these guys are always talking about these cases. Do you, in a case as big as this, do you keep a timeline up in your office? Are you constantly adding or maybe taking away from it and looking at it and saying, like, what are we missing on this timeline, or what happened here, what happened there? And specific to this, what are you looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you maintain one. And what we're looking at here is in this timeline, and it's pretty good. I mean, it's made up of provable things. These are all provable investigative facts that can be confirmed by witnesses or the physical devices. And so this timeline, and then the dispatch logs. So this timeline, so when you have a provable fact, then you can insert it into this timeline. And I agree with Phil. And I think they probably already know what happened between 5:32 and 9:48. And maybe they are choosing for whatever reason not to put that information out, but at least they know what people have told them went on in that period of time. They have witness statements. If she was at the her daughter's residence. And then the 228 entry, that,
sorry about that,
is to me haunting as well. I have a little bit of experience with this. Of course, it's not a pacemaker. It's another medical device. I know that my father's, when he gets a certain distance away from his phone, this device disconnects. Everything's hooked up to your phone now. So if he forgets his phone when we go somewhere, or leaves it in the car when we go, and we get a certain distance away from that, his medical device gets a certain distance away from that phone, then there's some kind of disconnect. So if the phone was recovered in the house, to me, that's a possibility of when the victim was removed from the residence and at a certain distance away from that residence, that disconnects from that phone device because they're designed to work in concert. And that's my concern. I believe that's probably going to match up with the time that you'd want to be looking at neighbors' cameras for vehicles traveling through the area. You'd be wanting to look for whatever they got in the way of electronic. It looked pretty remote, the area, and just in my looking at it. But I think that's the area that is at some point, that's when the phone separated from the medical device at a distance that allowed it to shut off or to disconnect. And here we go. So that would be a time that I would be focusing heavily on in the immediate vicinity of that, the traffic that's moving at that time are going to be the people.
And Jay, you see, I'll just go back to it for a quick second here. And I brought up that other photo for a reason, but like the doorbell camera disconnects 1:47 AM. Would they know through the company whether the doorbell was removed or absolutely just smashed and shattered? Is that important? Is that a detail that the company would know?
Well, if I'm going to leave with somebody, and I don't personally possess one, so I don't want to be bothered when somebody comes. I don't want my phone reacting to my doorbell all the time. I let my German Shepherd take care of all those concerns. But But I would be of the opinion that the company and or the investigators already have that answer too. Whether it was just unplugged, whether it was damaged in some way, if it was disabled from inside, if that's something. But if I'm certainly going to move somebody out of that residence, I'm going to want that known camera disabled. So, and you notice that that time is about 13 minutes till 1:47 a.m. And then at 2:28, the medical device is finally disconnected from the phone, which indicates some distance to me. So once again, this is the period of time that as a homicide detective, these are the things I want to fill in on that timeline, because I think that therein lies the harmful events.
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about Mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flour, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
We're looking at a picture of Savannah Guthrie on the set of Today with her mother. And if you look closely, she's obviously using a cane, and that just goes to her mobility issues. But if you look at her left arm, it's a little bruised. And sometimes people who are on blood thinners will have that. And that probably speaks to her heart issues. I've saw a lot of debate, you know, would a woman at 84 years old be out at that hour? I mean, there's all sorts of different 84-year-olds. My mother, 86, sometimes is up to 1 in the morning. She'd be out hanging out. She's got a lot of energy. Others don't. So I don't know anything about Nancy Guthrie to know that specifically. But Bernard, let me come back to you and just ask a question. So, you know, we now saw that if you came in late, Cameron Guthrie, the brother, just released an Instagram video. And I'm going to play Savannah's again because I just want to see if anything jumps out. But if this was my own family and I have one sister and she did something nefarious over a 5-day period, I think that I would be able to elicit that from her, or I would at least know. Wouldn't family be one of the best sources for law enforcement right here if they think that the sister or her husband had something to do with this? Wouldn't they be leaning more on the family instead of putting out these, you know, get in touch ransom type messages?
You know, what comes to mind for me is that they may not want to tip their hat to the family if that's in fact the case where they're considering her or them, because they're going to be interested in the communication that's happening, right, while this is all going on, because there could be stuff that they communicated to each other as a family that's deceptive. Like they're saying something about where they were, what's going on, that's contrary to what they already know. And so, you know, they very well could be interested in that. But at the same time, being able to see how they're communicating without anybody knowing it could be hugely valuable initially, because they could always go that route, but it causes, again, disruption or whatever's happening. Plus, I mean, the other thing to consider is I'm sure that the other two family members would have expressed a concern about the relationship with the, you know, with these other family members, that there was something off or whatever going on. But in the meantime, at least they have a way of picking up their communication to see if they're saying something that's not exactly true, which means they're in concealment mode or whatever. Plus, if they are looking at them, they're going to want to see who they're communicating to, because maybe this is done through a proxy. So I can see, think of a lot of reasons why they would not tip their hat or reveal that to the family at this point.
Yeah. Two quick comments, and I just want to get back to this issue of family. I'm going to play Savannah's interview, or not interview, but what she released yesterday. And then after that, we'll get some final thoughts. But this super chat from We Talkin', most important case detail for me, Phil Ramos, news channel interviewed a neighbor who would exchange pleasantries with Nancy, but had no idea whose mum she was, using the old British Canadian terminology. I mean, I'm not exactly sure why that's the most important detail for this person. It just goes to the fact that this woman wasn't walking around saying, hey, my daughter is host of the Today Show, making $8 million a year with a net worth of $40 million. It just goes to show that she's probably humble and not bragging about her daughter. But how important is that from an investigative standpoint when you're, you know, canvassing a neighborhood? Nobody here has any idea that her daughter is who she is.
You know, it's not that unusual. I don't think there's a great deal of significance to it, but there's a lot of people that are private and keep to themselves. I can absolutely see why she didn't want to tell the neighbors that, you know, hey, my daughter's a internationally famous broadcaster. Everybody sees her in the morning, and she's relatively wealthy. I wouldn't want to brag about that. I don't put any whole lot of importance on that. I think it's more ancillary than anything else.
Yeah. Before we get to this comment, Willow Song is yelling at me at 2 a.m., there's a recorded spike on her pacemaker. It is not on your timeline, exclamation mark. Ramos, I'm going to stick with you on this one, but apparently at 2 a.m., let me try to bring the timeline back up. There's this recorded spike here. I just have to, there we go. 2 a.m. So between 1:47 and between the doorbell camera disconnecting and the software detecting some sort of human, there's a spike apparently on her pacemaker. What's that tell you, that she was shocked or surprised or what?
I don't know. I don't know the significance of that. We've talked about the pacemakers have a couple of reasons for being on a person, and I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. I can't answer that.
Okay. I like the honesty. See, no ego, as Bernard said. One more here for Phil Ramos. Has Savannah's ex-husband been ruled out? Difficult thing to ask, but you have to do this in law enforcement. Thinking of Monique and Spencer Tepe, he would know the layout of the home. I don't know if he would. They were married a long time ago. She's been there a long time, perhaps, and more. So maybe you're right. There was this weird interview that Savannah Guthrie did at one point with Monica Lewinsky. I couldn't find it now, but I had it the other day. And she really resisted talking about her first husband, said it was a very difficult time. It just came across as there was a big problem in the marriage with her first husband. You got to look at him, right? If you're out there, and I forget his name, he's a journalist. We're not coming at you, but Phil Ramos, what do you do with the first husband?
Yeah, you talk to Savannah about that in depth, and that's going to come into the area of who would have wanted to do this to your mom. Name, does anybody come to mind, that neighbors or distant relatives or old friends, something like that, that would have come under that umbrella? And you would cover that.
All right, I'm going to play Savannah Guthrie again. This, everyone has seen this, but we've got three new amazing experts, not Ramos, he was here. Let's just see if anything jumps out at them again watching this now in light of the news that has transpired since this was released yesterday.
On behalf of our family, we want to thank all of you for the prayers for our beloved mom, Nancy. We feel them, and we continue to believe that she feels them too. Our mom is a kind, faithful, loyal, fiercely loving woman of goodness and light. She is funny, spunky, and clever. She has grandchildren that adore her and crowd around her and cover her with kisses. She loves fun and adventure. She is a devoted friend She is full of kindness and knowledge. Talk to her and you'll see. The light is missing from our lives. Nancy is our mother. We are her children.
I'm going to stop it here because everyone has seen it. Jay, this is the first time you've been on looking at it. I'm noticing things every time and that happens. So this watching at this time, you see how invested Savannah is. She looks broken. And then you go to Annie. She's much more stoic, less invested, almost separated from the reality. I'm no therapist, I'm no psychologist, I'm no body language expert, but what do you see in this video? I'm sure you watched it too. So
yeah, absolutely. It could be a lot of things. I used to get that question a lot. How did they react when you informed them of the demise of a loved one? And oftentimes it was parents of younger people that we had to go make that notification on. And everybody handles these stressful, life-altering situations in a different manner. And it's hard to judge what I guess you all have a reaction you would expect because you know how you would react. But then to put that off on somebody else, she seems certainly stressed. I'm sure they're exhausted. Physically and mentally exhausted. They've been interviewed dozens of times to this point by investigators, and they've been handed these scripts. And so I'm not going to read a lot into this, the body language and the things now, because like I said, first of all, I don't know these people. I don't know how they would deal with this kind of thing. And secondly, it's you can glean a lot of information. If somebody doesn't appear shocked by it, there are some tells in body language and demeanor that historically or scientifically have been linked to deception and or presumption of guilt or involvement. So those things are valuable tools, and this will be broken down, I'm sure, by those investigators as well, but it could just be that's how she handles things. So it could be as simple as that.
Now I'm getting yelled at that talk about the heart rate spiking is just something a cardiologist suggested. So as I like to say, the show is called Surviving the Survivor. My mother's a child Holocaust survivor, and she is she likes to give me a hard time. But now I'm just surviving STS because I've got all these adopted mothers, brothers, sisters, and fathers yelling at me, which is fine. I like to be yelled at. I'm so used to it. If I wasn't yelled at, I wouldn't know what to do. I'm going to continue to play this out. Bernard has not weighed in for us on this. And this video is absolutely devastating and fascinating at the same time. And if Nancy Grace was here, she would scream at me for saying fascinating because it is a tragedy. And these are the victims. She's done that to me already, but not on this story. Here we go.
She is our beacon. She holds fast to joy in all of life's circumstances. She chooses joy day after day, despite having already passed through great trials of pain and grief. We are always going to be merely human, just normal human people who need our mom. Mama. Mama, if you're listening, we need you to come home. We miss you. Our mom is our heart and our home. She is 84 years old. Her health, her heart is fragile. She lives in constant pain. She is without any medicine. She needs it to survive. She needs it not to suffer. We too have heard the reports about a ransom letter in the media. As a family, We are doing everything that we can. We are ready to talk. However, we live in a world where voices and images are easily manipulated. We need to know, without a doubt, that she is alive and that you have her. We want to hear from you, and we are ready to listen. Please reach out to us. Mommy, if you are hearing this, you are a strong woman. You are God's precious daughter, Nancy. We believe and know that even in this valley, he is with you. Everyone is looking for you, Mommy, everywhere. We will not rest. Your children will not rest until we are together again. We speak to you every moment, and we pray without ceasing, and we rejoice in advance for the day that we hold you in our arms again. We love you, Mom.
Love you, Mom.
We love you, Mom. Stay strong.
We love you, Mom.
Absolutely brutal. Yeah.
I noticed on there, and it may not mean anything, it's just an observation that I made, that the son didn't participate in that at all. And both sisters had the script in front of them. And there was that one point just before it transitioned to Annie. And I'm thinking it's because she was getting ready to, you know, go into her speech, where she takes a breath and you could literally see the veins in, pop out in her neck, and her respiration kind of picks up a couple of times. So that's just something that jumped out at me just now as I was watching that.
Yeah. I mean, Phil Ramos, if this was your case, how many times would you have watched this video already?
A few. And I would have been there when they were making it too.
Yeah.
When that, because we know that the majority of that was prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're literally reading off scripts. Bernard, I don't want to harp on this too much. Just a couple more things, and I promise we'll get final thoughts. Bernard's new, so I don't think he knows that I like to extend the time sometimes. But Bernard, I appreciate your indulgence here. Again, if I'm Savannah Guthrie, and the Pandora's box was opened essentially by Ashley Banfield, who reported on this, saying she had sources saying that it is potentially this sister in this video and her partner or husband, Thomas Occhione. But if I'm Savannah, or if I'm this guy Cameron, in a 5-day period, and I'm just basing this in my own family, I have one sister who, by the way, is the perfect child, so she's a bad example. But I mean, I would know, because I know her well enough, that something would be very wrong with her. She'd be feeling the pressure. She'd be feeling the weight of the moment. She'd be feeling the weight of the investigation. Does this suggest that it's not anything related to the sister, to Annie and the husband, because they're still making these videos, or have they potentially just not cracked yet? What do you make of it?
So I'm going to express a theory here that is unconventional. So I apologize if I'm about to contaminate your show.
Please.
But, you know, you look at the fact, as human beings, we're the only species that have choice, right? Animals have instinct. They have to do their choice. And they, you know, if you look at the rabbinic sermon, God made the angels and they have to do God's will. That's it. Human beings, we have choice. So there's no bottom to our depravity or evil, and there's no ceiling to our goodness. And the scary thing is, people can conceal, and we all do conceal wickedness and things that are happening in our mind. And it can be hidden behind stoicism. It can be hidden behind enthusiasm. And so I don't necessarily feel that even with siblings, that they might have the ability to detect something as a conspiracy to do something with the mother necessarily. I know that sounds, but you would just be surprised, because there's a person, maybe they socialize, or as they age, they lose their conscience. And so they become more, stoicism becomes sociopathy in a way. So it's possible. improbable, but it is possible that even siblings would not detect that somebody was concealing such an act. And of course, they'd be shocked. But that happens to victims all the time. And it happens to family members all the time when they find out that somebody they thought they knew extensively was actually a monster and did things. You know, we have that experience in as human beings. And it's, you know, it's one of the fallibilities of us.
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep. And man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE. Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
That is incredibly fascinating. But Phil Ramos, I'll go back to you on that. I mean, is another way to say this that maybe they're in denial if, in fact, they're involved. I'm not saying that they are, but could it be that Savannah and her brother are just in denial that their sister could be part of something like this?
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think one of our viewers there made the comment that, you know, Savannah's used to being the one to report this to the world. And now she's on the other side of the fence and she's the one that's being reported about. So she's used to being able to take these hard facts and hard circumstances and convey them. Whereas the other two, maybe not so much. Well, but then again, you know, being a F-16 pilot, there's not much going to faze him anyway.
Yeah. Those guys have, you know, ice in their veins. Another Detective Ramos from We Talking About Practice. By the way, Bernard was speaking my language. My dad, may he rest in peace, was a psychiatrist for 40 plus years. He had a book in 1971, Rutgers University Press, Humanistic Psychiatry from Oppression to Choice. My dad was a huge believer in, Bernard, no one in my family has ever understood my dad's book, and I'm trying to rewrite it now with a twist. So I'm going to send you a copy. You can get it on eBay for like 14 cents. But
I highly recommend, if you remember, Dr. M. Scott Peck, who wrote The Road Less Traveled.
Yeah.
He also wrote a companion book that's incredibly disturbing called People of the Lie. And it is a clinical examination of human evil. And I used to make it required reading in some of my commands just because – you know, the people that can pass a background investigation, top secret investigation, may not have any personal experience with the fact that the boogeyman or the monster doesn't look like me. They look like a nice person. And that book is, it's shocking and it's all clinically based. And it's very important for people in this line of work to have that exposure.
What's the title again?
People of the Lie, Dr. M. Scott Peck.
I'm going to check it out. You know, we just covered a case, Donna Adelson, and she was convicted of a murder for hire plot, 75. I think today is her birthday, everyone, Donna Sue Adelson. She's now spending the rest of her life in prison. But when the prosecutor began opening statements, she pointed to her and said, there is no look for a killer. A killer can look like anybody. And this person here, this grandmother, is a murderer. I thought it was really powerful. Detective Ramos here. Do you think, you get the tough questions, she's dead? Thanks for your expertise.
Given the totality of circumstances, the information that we know as of today, I'm going to go with she is deceased, but we don't know everything that the homicide guys know. There's that unknown factor, and that could change one's thoughts and opinions if you have that information. But given the circumstances and what we know today, I'm going with, I hate to say it, but yeah, I think she has passed.
It's, and listen, Phil Ramos does not say that lightly. I know that. And he's been doing this for a long time, a lot of experience, and you get a gut instinct. We hope it's not true. Jay Fulton to you, and then we'll get final thoughts. If you don't know Jay Fulton, he is a retired homicide detective from the heart of the country, sort of, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, the Ohio State Buckeyes. He was with us for the Tepe murders. He'll be with us for many more cases in the future. And if you didn't follow it, that autopsy report came back. We were always talking about Monique having been shot one time. She was shot nine times. And I think Spencer seven, the brutality of that case is really something to behold. So thanks to Jay for walking us through that. Now walking us through here, there's a question. Why in this video with Savannah Guthrie was she saying mommy? I mean, I assume that's because that's what she refers to her as. Was there an ulterior motive there, Jay? And just your final thoughts about where we are in this case right now.
Yeah, I think that's once again, I'm going to refer back to my our federal partners here, but that's a real personalizing term. Even the most cold-blooded killer can remember mommy, and that's putting the missing person. That's really putting a label on that every one of us in this life can associate with, and that's to humanize the victim. I think those are the terms that they would be referenced to use. What are they called? And maybe they did. Maybe that's what they refer to her as all the time. I know my, you know, but likely that's a preferred method to, once again, we all had a mommy at one point in our lives, even these cold-blooded criminals. And, you know, I will echo Phil's thoughts based on the totality here. And unfortunately, it would be my professional opinion that what we're dealing with is probably going to switch to the recovery really soon because of the time that's continuing to elapse. I mean, it's tragedy. It's certainly affected a lot of people.
I mean, I don't know that Savannah Guthrie, she'll recover. I just don't know how, and the amount of time, and just being in the public spotlight the way she is, her life is forever changed. You know, even if she's found, and hopefully she's found alive, her life.
Absolutely. Experience,
yeah, is forever changed.
And if this is somehow tied to this celebrity, her celebrity, then I don't know. I mean, And once again, it's a thought. It's an avenue I'm sure that the detectives have to go down, because in places where they're concentrated celebrities, this is a type of crime that we see. This is not a type of crime we see in Columbus, Ohio, but the celebrity brings on a price tag of its own sometimes.
Jay, to you, just real quick on this one here. I missed this. I know this is a long shot, but can they do a grid search with their phone and see if it connects?
Yeah, I'm not aware of the technology. I just know that when at certain times when my dad's phone gets left at home, we get we have an alert type thing that goes off because we're out of range. And they control, you can control some of your medications through the phone now. So, I mean, these things are like boat anchors to us these days. You've got to have it with you all the time.
Bernard Zaper, who I was calling Zapor, a very interesting guy. I like his vibe, the intellectual of criminal justice here, coming to us with some unique perspectives. Retired 25-year veteran of the U.S. Department of Justice, an ATF special agent in charge. He's got a security firm. You see that? 3 Delta, is it, right behind him? And teaches occasionally at Arizona State University. The sheriff specifically said, again today, there are no persons of interest. There are no suspects. but nobody is eliminated. How do you read between the tea leaves? Your final thoughts, Bernard, and thank you for being here.
You know, I'm going to pitch the enterprise that I'm involved in, which is eSleuth, that is going to change law enforcement. It's like DNA has taken us 40 years to get to this point, right? Because when it was first collected, they had to be able to differentiate what it was compared to things that weren't there in the time. And this is using AI, non-generative AI, which means it can't think for itself or make decisions that are contrary. We built a brain that is the very best criminal investigations manual, the best prosecutor's manual, the best medical examiner's manual. And it's like going to a police department and giving them 1,000 seasoned detectives and 1,000 crime analysts. They speak telepathically. They work 24/7. They never take maternity leave. They never get sick. They never go out. And it's working. And the outcomes are crazy amazing. And so in a case like this, it would be helpful just on the simple case management of it. And it's going to be doing it. It literally will analyze every photograph, every recording, every single thing, and put it all together and make the connections and digest it and put it on a plate for the investigators. It'll have probability scores like this thing is 90%. And you need to do these three things immediately. And so eSleuth, we're trying to get this out. It's very inexpensive. We don't charge a lot to police departments for what it is. We have two agencies in Arizona that'll be some of the pioneers, and then agencies in the other parts of the country that this thing is about to take off. I'm just incredibly excited about it because, you know, we have had obviously a mass exodus of vocation. If you have somebody that's been doing homicide for 10 years, and they have that's at the end of their total 30-year career, and they retire and out the door they go. That's a massive loss of skill and acumen. And it's not replaced with somebody who's doing a 5-year patrol and then they work in like a vice or a jump out unit and then they migrate into homicide. It's very hard to recover that. And the fact that it's harder and harder to attract people to law enforcement right now. So this thing is a massive gap filler, but also it's holding somebody's hand and teaching them investigations because it's helping them show them what they need to do. And so, you know, those of us that are involved there, it's a mix of law enforcement and Silicon Valley, like Silicon Valley that has done other big law enforcement technologies in the past successfully. This is our last hurrah. We're all at the end of our useful, I would say, professional lives. And this is going to be the gift that keeps on giving. And so, I mean, eSleuth will eventually be here. Actually, one of the pioneer agencies is very close to Tucson. It's just not in play yet. But cases like this, if we are looking back on it a year from now, I mean, who knows what the outcomes would be in terms of taking all this mass information that they have and codifying it right now. So even if they only have two FBI agents working on it and three sheriff's deputy and a Tucson PD homicide person that's on loan to the case, it is doing the thing as if they had 50 of them and without conflicting with each other. So it's pretty spectacular. And I'm grateful to be involved with eSleuth.
Yeah, I'd love to do a show with you about it.
We can do a demonstration. It's shocking. Yeah. I have a friend who is you know, he's been the chief of police in a couple of municipal police departments, and now he's the sheriff in the county where he was raised, and his best friend's mother was killed when they were in high school. And we're running that through, and it's estimated that'll be like a 9-minute solve for that case. Wow. And it's only because the other thing is you're removing assumption. So, for example, I'm working on a case, I submit something to the lab, and then I get assigned to something else or I get taken out of the unit. And hopefully in the case file, there's the follow-up on whoever comes after me that's got to run the rest of that case. But the assumption is it's gone to the lab and it's waiting for results. What we don't know is it's never made it into the lab. It's sitting on their shelf. And it's been sitting on their shelf. So when the AI sees it, said, hey, what's going on with this? And it finds out that this thing is sitting on the shelf. It's been sitting on the shelf for 12 years. It never got caught in the lab's audit. And it's still sitting there. Get that thing into the lab. They get it into the lab. Boom. In the last 3 years since it's been sitting there, there's a bazillion examples coming from 23andMe or whatever. And all of a sudden you have and all the DNA that's taken from arrest swabs now. And next thing you know, you have somebody that is in penitentiary, died 2 years ago, that has a definitive DNA match to the case.
So it's just, yeah, well, Yeah, I'm going to connect with you and do a show. Maybe we'll get the CEO on with you. Yeah. I'm getting yelled at again because apparently I missed this from Bubble Beans 22. Phil Ramos, is it normal for ICAC? I don't know. I'm not sure if I know what that is, to show up on cases like this. Do we know what ICAC is,
Phil? I believe that's the reference to a unit that works internet crimes against children.
Oh, yeah. That is what.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that they showed up, but Phil Ramos, is it normal?
I don't think that it would be, given the task of ICAC. It's got nothing to do with children. I mean, the Internet Task Force Crimes Against Children is specifically for children. So unless we've got that moniker incorrect, I don't see why it would be out there.
Jay Fulton, any idea since you know what this was?
I think maybe what you're dealing with there, at least in my experience, working around those folks, they tended to be a lot more savvy with the technology, the computers, the phones, the data.
Court lurker here's got an answer. I heard ICAC knows about abductions, maybe that's what it is, ransom and hot. Maybe they're more well. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Jay, but I saw this.
No, that's fine. My understanding was that they're technically advanced in a lot of the computer downloads, and are because of the nature of the crime they investigate, they do a lot of technology. They work with the technology because most of what they do is internet based. So if they're doing deep dives into people's computers, you're going to want the people that are best at doing those deep dives.
For sure. And apparently ICAC worked on the family video. I'm just always curious about this. Like, what are these people doing the other 54 years of their life? Because these kidnappings are so ransom, but that's a whole other story. Phil Ramos, legend in my eyes, retired homicide, Las Vegas PD, three-time officer of the year. Undercover narcotics guy infiltrated the Cuban mob. He was at Tupac Shakur's autopsy. He's done it all, Phil. I'm going to leave it totally open ended. You know, you watched the news conference. What comes next, do you think?
Whatever comes next is going to make or break it, I think, because we're at that threshold now. We're well beyond the first 48. We're past, the amount of time that it would have taken to do a thorough crime scene investigation. So unless something comes up in the next couple of days, I don't see a good ending to this, man. I don't see it.
Sounds like you don't see it already, but at the very least, if God forbid she's no longer with us, they've got to recover her at the very least. So yeah. Everyone just keep her, Nancy Guthrie, in your thoughts, your prayers, if you do that. And we're going to continue to cover this. I'm going to do my best to come to you tomorrow, probably a little bit later in the day. Love you, America. Love you, Jay. Columbus, Ohio. Phil Ramos in Vegas. Scottsdale and Bernard Zaper. Bernard, I always put guests on the spot. Will you come back, even though I went a little heavy tonight?
Of course. I am awesome. Privileged to be here and a privilege to be with these two men.
Very, very grateful to have you. We'll do it again, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. You got to follow me on Twitter, @PodcastSTS, on Instagram, @SurvivingSurvivor for showtimes. On your way out, please hit the like and subscribe button. We've got an active Patreon page. Be safe. Be kind. Love your mother. And I'll see you soon.